The Las Vegas Raiders have partnered with the global lifestyle app True Connect to give the gift of wellness. Transform your mind, body, and soul through thousands of hours of premium fitness content, guided meditations, progress tracking, and more. Visit tcfree.fit to redeem one free year of True Connect exclusively for Raider Nation.
Welcome to Raiders Roundtable, presented by America First Credit Union. I'm JT, along with Q Myers. Lincoln Kennedy in a little bit, and Q, this is the newest podcast on the Raiders Podcasting Network. Great to work with you, and great to work with you coming off a W.
Yes, that's so important, coming off a W. It's always good to talk some Raiders football and be in this beautiful podcast studio as well.
It's a big deal. Raiders needed a win, an 0-3 start. We didn't expect that, but in a game that the Raiders had to have at home in the division, I thought they put together their first complete game of four quarters and were able to close out the Denver Broncos.
No doubt about it. That was something that they so desperately needed to do. We've seen halves that were really good, you know, offensively and defensively, but we hadn't seen four quarters, and we saw that on Sunday.
Well, if you would have told me that Derek Carr would throw for less than 200 yards and no touchdowns, I'd say no chance they're going to win the game unless they had a vicious running performance, and they did, led by Josh Jacobs, 28 carries for 144 yards and two touchdowns. Q, that's the game I've been waiting for him. You know, we grew up in a generation where running backs could get you 150, 140. Right. I expect this from Josh Jacobs more often.
And I think he does, too. He expects it as well. I mean, he's one of those guys that gets better as the game goes along, the more touches he gets. And not only did he get the 28 carries, but also five catches for 31 yards. I thought that was important. He just was very involved and active on Sunday.
What also impressed me was the offensive line. This organization has a system in place now with Colt Miller at left tackle where they didn't figure it out. They had to run a rotation of seven. Do you feel like we're getting closer to the starting five after that performance and that great, gritty running game?
Yeah, the guys that I saw end the game are the guys that I think we'll see start the game on Monday against Kansas City. You know, I think Alex Barrs has settled in at that left guard spot. You saw how valuable Andre James was returning to the lineup at the center position. Not that Dylan Parham had done a good, bad job, but sliding him over to the right guard position helped out as well. So Thayer Munford there, the rookie at the right tackle position, I think that's your five.
Yeah, and Munford's a seventh-round pick.
Right.
And Parnum's never played. These guys are rookies, and they were thrown in. You could tell. I got to give a lot of credit to Dave Ziegler and Josh Jacobs. Josh McDaniels. They realized that they had to have these guys ready in case of injury, and they had to be versatile. And I thought they were very versatile in the last couple of weeks. They really needed to show that they could play multiple positions.
Right. It's so funny because GM Dave Ziegler mentioned that the minute he took the job that they were going to find a bunch of versatile guys. And I was like, okay, you know, coach speak, GM speak. That's cute. But they absolutely, that's what they got is a bunch of versatile guys, and it's paying off.
Now, there were some Bronco fans there.
Yeah, they were.
They were there.
Yeah,
There was a sea of orange in some sections there. But I want to get this elephant out of the room because people are coming to Vegas, and they want to see their team
absolutely
play. And there were a lot of fans there. But that was one of the loudest games I could remember from Raider fans. Mm-hmm. Raider fans were really engaged in the fourth quarter, on their feet on third down, really willing this team. And I thought the crowd level and intensity was great. It was good to see those Bronco fans at about a minute 40 left in the game fleeing to the exit.
No doubt about it. Raider Nation had a great time waving to the Bronco fans bye, right?
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for coming. Thanks for spending your money, but bye. You're going home with the L. And so, look, that's what it's going to be. Fans are going to come to Allegiant Stadium because they want to be in Vegas, right? And look, if the Raiders keep winning games, they'll be less and less and less because Raider Nation will all be at Allegiant Stadium and not sell any tickets.
Well, I love the fact that Derek Carr ran it seven times for 40 yards in this game. I think it's a fair criticism of Derek.
Yep.
Derek can do everything right. He can make every throw. But from time to time, he's got to go out there and make a big run on not even third down. It
right.
could be first down if the pocket breaks down. Do you think that's something now that he's going to be more confident with and maybe run a little bit more? Because I think he can do it.
I hope so. I really do. Five first downs he picked up with his legs. That's important. And really on that last drive when the Raiders needed it the most, he picked up 9 yards to extend the drive. And they ultimately score a touchdown on that drive to basically salt the game away. They needed that. He can do it. He's shown he can do it. He just has to have the confidence. I think that game on Sunday was big for him.
Devontae had 9 receptions for 101 yards. He didn't have a touchdown. Obviously, as we said, none of the receivers had a touchdown. Waller 3 for 24, and in the protocol still is Hunter Renfrow.
Right.
But you could just see, and you were in the locker room, the euphoria there. They don't care about stats.
Right.
These players, some of them are superstars. They want wins, and I think a lot of air came out of that room, some tension now that they won a game, and those touchdowns will soon come.
No doubt. Devontae Adams said it was a big relief that they got a W. He said, we weren't panicking, but we needed to get a W, you know, and we just needed to see the payoff, that all the hard work was going to pay off with a win, and they got that on Sunday, and you could just see the smiles and the joy in the players' face in the locker room.
Yeah, on Raiders Roundtable, one of the first things I want to talk about is the plan that Dave Ziegler has and Josh McDaniels, and I believe in the plan. And normally when someone takes over, they better have a plan.
Yeah.
And their plan, sure. And those who've compared it to the Patriot way, they're trying to elevate the football side of this building with scouting and the way they prepare and game plan and do all that. And they have never wavered, even at 0-1, 0-2 against Arizona, 0-3 in Nashville. They're sticking by this plan, and I think Raider fans are starting to understand it, that this is a long-term plan. You want to win every game, but you saw that plan come together with the versatility.
Yeah, you really did, and they want to have success right now, of course. Every team wants to have success right now, but also they don't want to have just a one-year shot-in-the-dark success, and then all of a sudden it's gone for another eight, nine years. They want to have continued success year after year after year, and they're building that. And look, you got to give the scouting crew a lot of credit. They picked in the third round. They picked in the seventh round. They have two starters on the offensive line. That's big.
Well, when you go out and get Devontae and you make the move, you're not going to have a first-round pick. And I thought by taking Dylan Parham early with that third-round pick showed you that they needed a guy who could play.
Yep.
And he could play. I didn't expect Mumford to be ready to go.
Not
at all.
He's
ready to go. Because he played. Let's talk about him for a second. He played at Ohio State. He played in all those big games. When I interviewed him when he came here, he was a captain and a player that played in four college football playoffs. There's only been a few in the history of Ohio State who can do that. So he's been battle tested.
Yeah, he really has. And, you know, he's played multiple positions at Ohio State, and he's gone to get some really good competition, right, and held his own. And, you know, to see him drop to the seventh round because he didn't have a stellar 2021 season, really, I think the Raiders got a steal. And, again, he's starting. That's big.
Now, as we record this podcast, we don't know exactly what the injury report will be by the end of the week, but Denzel Perryman is in protocol. And Q, we got to spend some time on this with the Tua injury. He played on a Sunday. Tua did against the Buffalo Bills and looked like he was concussed. He was able to come back and play. He shouldn't have played on that Thursday night in Cincinnati.
No.
And then there was a violent hit. He had the hand spasms. And now it looks like the league is very concerned about this because it's a mainstream media topic. When they're talking about this on the Today Show and Good Morning America, you know the league is saying, wait a second.
Right.
We got to get this one right. So we hope that Perryman clears protocol. We hope that Hunter does because he's been in it for a couple of weeks. But I think we're about to see possibly a change in protocol where guys will be out a little bit longer and teams are going to err on the side of caution. How do you see it?
I agree 100%. You know, over the weekend, the NFL and the NFLPA, they put out the joint thing, you know, the joint statement that they were going to work on the protocols. And they do. They just got to get it right. Every guy is going to want to go out there and play. But sometimes you just got to save them from themselves because, again, the concussion thing is serious. We saw it with Tua. No way he should have been out there. I think all these teams moving forward will definitely be cautious.
Yeah, I think it's going to change the league. I think it's a critical moment in league history as they try to get it right. Let's update everyone. Blake Martinez to the practice squad as an insurance player. Guy has played a lot of downs in this type of system that we've seen for Patrick Graham. I think it shows that Dave Ziegler is very active in making sure that the Raiders have enough bodies and good players to go into Kansas City.
You know
City.
What I like, though, is the fact that now on the practice squad you can have veterans, right, that have been there, done that, and Blake Martinez is that guy. He's been there, done that. He's a great insurance policy. He could be called up on game day. Like you mentioned, he's been in Patrick Graham's scheme. It's not like he's going to have to get caught up to speed. It's almost like when the Raiders traded for Denzel Perryman, he was already familiar with the scheme he was going into. So I think Blake Martinez could be available immediately if needed. So great insurance policy and great get by Dave Ziegler.
Great get is for us. We got Lincoln Kennedy coming up next, one of the all-time great offensive linemen for the Silver and Black. He's also on the radio broadcast with Jason Horowitz. We'll talk to Big Lincoln next on the offensive line, the improvements, and did one player show up on the defensive line for the Raiders? We'll get to Lincoln coming up next on Raiders Roundtable.
When you're a part of a team, there are expectations. And one of the things I expect from my team is trust. I work hard to win, and I trust my team to work hard too. That's why I feel good about America First Credit Union. They're my financial team, and I trust that they'll always be there for me and my community.
Thank you.
I'm Hunter Renfro. Join me and the America First team today.
Welcome back to Raiders Roundtable, presented by America First Credit Union. We get a chance to bring in our friend Lincoln Kennedy, the multiple Pro Bowler, the color analyst on the Raiders radio network. And Lincoln, good to get a win at Allegiant Stadium in front of some Bronco fans, a heavy dose of Raider fans. A lot of people breathing a little bit easier this week.
I don't care if it's in Allegiant Stadium, in Bronco Stadium. I don't care where. A win is a win is a win, and I love it. Good to be with you guys. How you doing today?
Doing fantastic, Lincoln. And, yeah, we were just talking about Josh Jacobs and the performance that he had and the way that he started the game, just running strong. And even when he caught a couple passes, you could just see he was really behind his pads and getting downhill. What did you see from Josh on Sunday?
Well, I've seen what I've seen so far this year, even in the preseason. I thought Josh Jacobs is a guy who's on a mission, who wants to prove his value and his worth to this Raiders organization. More importantly, he wants to be a part of it. He wants to be a big part of this offense. So he ran hard in the preseason when they gave him carries. He's run hard so far throughout the regular season. This was the first dose, heavy dose of Josh Jacobs that we've seen all season. And I think it paid off. That's one of the reasons why the Raiders were able to walk out of Allegiant with a win.
Lincoln, did you see that because of the offensive line? What worked up front with this offensive line, especially going from 7 to 5 and some guys who technically could be playing out of position but played a really good game?
Well, you know what? It's kind of a double-edged sword, JT. The fact is the Raiders do not have a good blocking tight end without Foster Moreau in the lineup, so you can't really run outside. So you have to run between the tackles. Now, you know me. I'm a guy who likes to push forward, so I appreciate the fact that they were running between the tackles effectively. Not only was Josh Jacobs running hard, but the front five and the front six, and when you include Jakob Johnson, was the fullback or whoever was in there, you would see them take on the defense's front seven. That's what's important. The first people who were making contact were safeties or defensive backs for the Broncos. That's important. When you're blocking the front seven, the defensive front seven, you're taking your back to the next level. That's extremely important when you're trying to block and get the run game established.
Lincoln, we've been talking about a variation of different offensive linemen, and the Raiders have rolled out a bunch of different front five. And so the front five that ended the game on Sunday is the front five I feel like the Raiders should be most comfortable with. Looks like Alex Barrs has slid into that left guard position. But there's two rookies on the right side in Parham and Munford. What'd you see from the rookies in particular?
Well, Munford still got a lot of work to do, especially with the block and pass rushers in this division, ideally. He's still got some work to do, but there's ways in the system that you can help protect him. I've always believed when it comes to offensive linemen, there's a little bit of a trial by fire. Now I say that cautiously because, let's face it, these quarterbacks these days are in the upwards of $35-45 million a year. You don't want to get them hurt. So you don't want to have too big of a fire, if you know what I mean. But to your point, Q, I think, you know, Parham and Munford are come a long way. And right now, if you're the Raiders, you got to find a combination that you can just work with and just settle with and take your lumps. And it's going to happen. You're going to have your trial by fire. You're going to win some. You're going to lose some. But the thing is that when you have a consistent offensive line in there, they build cohesiveness. They build consistency. They build a sort of a rapport with one another when they know some of that nonverbal communication that's going to be important. I think that's what we're coming into. We're coming into that time after the first month of regular season football where you're kind of seeing that little bit of consistency with the front five.
Lincoln, I thought it was critical that Derek ran, and he ran with a purpose. I've been calling for this for a long time. What I mean by that is not when the pocket breaks down where he has to run, where he sees a hole early because defenders are chasing Devontae and Waller. They have their back turned to the defensive line, and Derek can see this early on, and the pocket breaks down and he takes off. Look, we're not asking him to be Lamar Jackson or Steve Young back in the day or a guy like Mahomes who we're going to see who's going to run often, but when he does, it really changes everything because it keeps the safeties locked in, knowing that he can do it. And I'm not talking about 3rd and 3. I'm talking about 3rd and 7 or 8 where he can prove that he can run for first downs.
You know, we've talked about this ad nauseum, JT, over the years, whether or not Derek Carr is going to run the ball. I remember having a conversation with the great Jim Plunkett, who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, by the way. One time we were getting on the bus after a game, and I said, why is it when Derek sees a wide open hole, he just doesn't take off and run? Now, I'm used to, because Rich did it, part of this offense when I played with Rich Gannon. Rich Gannon would take off. He would go through his progression. If nothing was there, he would take off. I got used to it as an offensive lineman, and I adjusted my blocking style for it. But with Derek, I remember Jim said, you know what? Some guys are just not made to do that, and they don't necessarily think about it in their mind. And I honestly think that, you know, Coach Josh McDaniels got the job because he had a vision and a plan for a pocket-settled quarterback who is Derek Carr. Now, Derek obviously has success. He's capable. He's athletic enough. When he runs the football, he can do things with it, with his legs. But it's just not in his buildup. So, you know, we've had this conversation many times. Why doesn't he take off? Why does he do it? It is what it is. This time is a case, a proof in point, where if you want something bad enough, you're going to make it happen. And that's what Derek Carr needs to realize as a quarterback of this Raiders team. There are things that he's going to have to make happen. There's times where he's going to have to take off. He's going to have to use his legs and not be afraid to do it. It has to click in his head a little bit more, if you know what I mean.
There was a lot made of the matchup between Davante Adams and Pat Surtain leading up to the game on Sunday, and I thought it was very entertaining. What did you think about the way that Davante and Pat were battling?
Well, this is what guys are going to do. The guys are going to come up to the challenge. They want to challenge the best. If you're Patrick Surtain, you want to challenge the best, and I thought he did a competent job. Look, if Derek Carr's accuracy and Davante Adams' ability is going to prove, you know, case point throughout the season. We know that. But if it's not there, if it's not totally there, then you're going to be challenged by some of the better defensive backs. And look, you're supposed to expect that. You want to be the best, you got to beat the best, you got to go out to play the best. So I thought it was a good matchup. I thought there were a lot of times where Derek might have misread where Adams was and where Surtain was, but they gave him cushion. They played him tight. This is going to be the sort of multiple looks that you're going to see on our number 17 throughout the season.
All right, Lincoln, let's stay with Davante. Big picture for the entire season so far with the touchdowns, the yards, the targets. We had Fred Biletnikoff and Tim Brown, two Hall of Famers, at the Torch on the pregame show. And we spent a lot of time talking about progressions. And is he open? Is he open intermediate? He's not a burner that goes long all the time. Not a speed receiver, but he can be sneaky fast and get open. Let's analyze what you've seen from Davante. Are they doing enough getting him in motion, moving him around to get him open? And will Derek lock in with him more?
The multiple times that I've watched him specifically, there's been times where he's been at the X, the Z, the slot. There's been times where they've run combination routes between him and Waller. And even when Renfro was healthy, him and Renfro, to get him open. I think he is a viable weapon that you certainly want to pay attention to and have a plan in every offensive game plan that you go into throughout the season. But I don't think he should be a focal point. And what I mean by that is we know how programmed and how sort of robotic Derek Carr can be. If you go out there and say this plan is specifically designed for Davante Adams and he tries to force the ball, that can put you in harm's way. If he's open, obviously you take it. If he's not, then don't force it. You got to have other options. But it's going to be up to Derek Carr to decide whether or not he can get the ball to him. Like, look, for example, in this past game against the Broncos, there were times where Surtain had such a huge cushion, you just threw a simple hitch route, a simple stop route, and you get 4 or 5 yards and it gets out of bounds. Those can break into big plays. If a cornerback misreads or comes up too aggressive and misses Davante, he can break big plays. But those are the little simple things that go for a reading and a progression that you take advantage of. If he's playing off, you throw him a quick hitch route. If he's playing up tight and there's not a safety over top, maybe you take the chance with a fade route. But you've got to read it accordingly. And more importantly, it comes down to the execution, not only of Adams getting open, but Derek Carr finding him in a reasonable way.
So going all full circle with this, Lincoln, we've talked about it multiple times about the Raiders finding an identity and early in the season didn't feel like they had one. Is it clear after Sunday that the identity is the strong run game behind Josh Jacobs?
Well, I mean, I think that I'm an offensive lineman. We always want to go forward rather than back up.
Right.
So I think that's always part of your identity. However, it's how you use it. It was surprising to me through the first three games prior to Sunday against the Broncos, the first three games that they didn't apply the run game more. I was surprised by that because I thought if you implement the run game at any particular time in a game, you're going to instill confidence in your offense. The thing that still plagues the Raiders, and we'll talk about it throughout the season, is their red zone scoring efficiency. They've got to find a way to get more touchdowns rather than more field goals. So, you know, what's frustrating to me as an analyst, and I'm sure you guys as fans are following the game and analyzing it as well, is the fact that they get a first down on the 3-yard line and they – three plays don't get them a touchdown. You know, that's frustrating. And that's what happens when you don't have a competent enough run game. So, you know, running the football is all about instilling demeanor, instilling your will on opposing teams. I was always the one that, you know, I looked at coaching staffs weird. If we were down that close on a goal line, why aren't we running the ball? Why aren't we running 14 blasts? Why aren't we trying to run power? What's going on? Do you not trust me? You not have confidence? So I think that's going to come in time. But we saw a formula that paid success, that they got the Raiders their first win. it'll be up to the coaching staff to see if we can continue this throughout the season.
Let's get to the Amik Robertson touchdown. This is something the Raiders were desperate to have, someone score on defense. Intercepting the football when it's thrown to you, picking up fumbles and getting to the end zone. Lincoln, again, as we said before you came on, I don't know if the Raiders win this game if Carr doesn't throw a touchdown, which he doesn't, and they don't have a defensive touchdown. This had Allegiant Stadium exploding on edge. This is what the Raider Nation has been waiting for, a defender to score and change the pace of a game. Take me through the play.
Well, JT, I'll tell you this. I don't think the Raiders win this football game if Robertson does return.
Absolutely.
For a touchdown.
Yep, agreed.
I don't. The fact that they were even kind of just going back and forth, you know, the fact is that the Raiders have their scoring difficulties. If you don't have this, what I call a scoop and score for a touchdown, I don't think the Raiders win this football game. With that being said, we've seen various stars on the defensive side stand out and have some decent performances. But as Q said earlier, this was the first game where it happened for all four quarters. This defense has been capable of playing lights out, has been capable of stopping opposing offenses, fell apart a couple of times during the Bronco game. That's going to happen. But I don't think that the Raiders win this game without the Robertson scoop and score. And more importantly, we've seen some of these players stand up and be accounted for. You know, Robertson was one of them. You know, Nate Hobbs continues to progress in the right way. I mean, we could talk about the standouts on the secondary, but we're still really banged up on the secondary. So I think they've got a plan for Jonathan Abram. And that's one of the big questions that I came into this season, you know, thinking what was Patrick Graham going to do? They have a plan for him. And of course, you know, Merrick coming back into the lineup, covering the tight end was huge. So it's going to be even bigger this week. So we've seen some of the stars, both on the defensive line and the secondary. And let me just point out one thing, because I don't think they get enough attention, guys. The interior part of this defense has played incredibly well through the four games. The interior part, the defensive tackles, I'm not talking about the Max Crosbys. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the Chandlers. I'm talking about the defensive tackles. That rotation that they've had has played very well. And what I mean by that is they are what we call offensive linemen. We call block eaters. Mm-hmm. Block eaters save the linebackers from being blocked. Block eaters allow the linebackers to progress from sideline to sideline, get in the hole, shoot the gaps. We saw that Denzel Perryman made some tackles in the backfield when he was healthy before the concussion protocol happened. But we saw that. The block eaters up front have done impressively well. And I'm surprised. Bilal Nichols, Jonathan Hankins, the list goes on and on. I'm surprised because I didn't think that we were going to have that production. That was one of my biggest question marks coming into this season. How was the defensive line going to perform? Now, they play a very heavy front. And what I mean by that is they cover up the interior part of the offensive lineman to keep those linebackers free. When you commit that many guys up front, you have to be good in the secondary. You have to be competent in the secondary. You have to cover your zones very well. And I think the defense has done a good job at that with under Patrick Graham.
Lincoln, we want to ask you about Max Crosby, but I want to go back to Amik real quick just because he had told us that he didn't touch the ball in the NFL until a couple weeks ago against the Cardinals when he got that interception. Then all of a sudden, he has the scoop and score. These kind of things can be contagious where now he has confidence. Now the ball is finding him. Can you think you can see this progression from Amik Robertson moving forward?
Well, however it happens, I think this defense needs to find a way to get turnovers to shorten the field.
Yeah, for sure.
They haven't done it consistently enough over the past couple of years. And I think it's one of the biggest nemesis as covering this defense, trying to find a way to get off the field. Doesn't always have to be three and outs, but if there's a long drive, you have to find a way to be competent and come together. And it was frustrating, you know, on that one drive the Broncos had where they were just marching down the field. I thought that maybe, you know, McDaniels and Patrick Graham should call a timeout to get everybody together. It didn't happen. And the Broncos ended up scoring a touchdown, which made the game closer. So there are instances like this, guys, where I think the defense has got to find a way to shorten the field, get turnovers. It doesn't matter how you do it, whether it's interception, fumble, whatever, but you have to do it. And I don't think they've done it enough so far.
I agree, Lincoln. I think the middle of the field has been wide open all year long. I've been very critical on Raider Nation Radio talking about that. And I want to get to you because we're going to transition to Max Crosby and what he did in that pass rush. But over the linebackers and before the safeties, there's been a spot there that other teams are picking apart. Ryan Tannehill had guys running wide open there, and Russell Wilson was connecting down the middle of that defense. What do you see from up top calling the game with Jason Horowitz? Why is there an area in the middle of the field that needs to be tightened up in the second half of that game? And they're always making the adjustments, and it seems to be a tale of two halves.
Well, the safeties don't want to get beat deep, so they're dropping deeper on those zone coverages. The linebackers are more cautious and worried about the run. The interior presence of that line are more concerned about the possible run or the underneath the screen throws. So yes, there is a big block of real estate, if you will, in the middle of the field. And that's been for everything. One of the things I've thought since not the Raiders, but the NFL has had these rules that allow the defenses to give you automatic first down. There's a ton of real estate for slot receivers and tight ends. There's a ton of space. If you have a competent slot receiver and a tight end in the National Football League, there are throws that you can complete almost every single time, whether it's a hitch, a stop route, a hook route, whatever, because there are holes. So this is not only just for the Raiders defense, this is for every defense, and it's whether or not an offense can exploit them. If you remember a couple of years ago when the Chiefs came in after the Raiders beat them, when they came into Allegiant Stadium, you remember what Andy Reid did? He threw the short routes as he matriculated down the field. Time of possession. He wasn't so concerned about the big ones. The Bengals did it last year when they came in. When they came in Allegiant Stadium, they threw the stop routes, they threw the hitches, they threw the short routes. That's something that you could take advantage of almost every defense. It's up to the guys that are playing, whether it's defensive backs or safeties, to not only know that, but also be more aggressive. Of course, you got to be mindful of the things deep, but at the same point, you also got to be mindful of the intermediate routes that a lot of teams are running against and having success with you. And I don't think that everyone's just kind of caught on to that just yet.
Got to ask you about Max Crosby. 2 sacks on the day, 4 tackles for loss. He leads the league with 8 tackles for loss. Not a surprise. His motor never stops. But what have you thought about Max Crosby, even the start of the season he's had?
Well, he would be one of those guys that I would hate to play against, because even when he's blocked, he's still trying to come. He's still trying to make an effort. And I think that is contagious, guys. I think that's what the defense feeds off, that energy, what Max Crosby does. You know, you saw in the highlight where he's jumping over piles and stuff like that. He's making plays. Let's face it. Teams are going to double him, that like the Tennessee Titans did. They wanted to take him out. They doubled him, not only with the tackle, but they had a chip from a tight end or a back. That's going to happen. So my suggestion and my theory has always been, if he's being doubled or triple teamed, somebody else needs to stand up and be accounted for, whether it's number 55, whether it's the defensive tackles, what have you. But I think we've seen a good dose of not only just a presence of blitzing when they have Jonathan Abrams or Nate Hobbs and stuff like that, but Max Crosby being able to slant and have that sort of free, you know, that free ticket to go wherever you want to, and we're going to cover your back end either with a linebacker or a defensive back, has really become contagious, because Max Crosby has made a ton of plays so far, and he's going to continue to make those.
All right, Lincoln, before we get to Kansas City, let's stay with 55 and Chandler Jones, where Josh McDaniels said at an earlier week press conference, he did a pretty good job against the run. And there were a couple of plays that came to him. He held the edge. Again, not getting to the quarterback frequently here, but I look at him as a guy, as a veteran. It's taking him a couple of games, because he didn't play in the preseason, to get his legs. I keep making the comparison like a boxer, an older boxer in a fight. It takes 3 or 4 rounds before you really start peaking in the 5th to the 10th round where you have your legs going. What have you seen that's encouraging here? Because eyes have been on him, and he's got to step up big as we go to Kansas City here and get to Patrick Mahomes. Let's talk about 55. Well,
you know, look, I believe that the stars have got to shine, and I've told you guys that when we talked various times. The stars have got to shine. Chandler Jones is one of those stars that was recently acquired through free agency that have got to shine. It's got to have big moments. Now, if you take that thought pattern that you just said, that sometimes old boxers need to get a couple of rounds, that's all fair and good. And I think a lot of coaches have taken that upon themselves as well, JT and Q, to say they're going to use the first month of football to kind of get our guys in football shape. The only problem I have with that is that the Raiders were very close to starting 0-4.
Right.
Yeah.
In a huge hole.
Yeah.
So I still hold to the fact where I think everybody needs preseason. And I'm sort of an old fogey like that. Anyways, with that being said, about Chandler Jones and these guys coming alive, if you have the fortune, I know you guys watched that Monday night football game last night against the Rams and the 49ers, right?
Yep. Sure.
If you have the fortune like the 49ers, where you don't have to blitz, where you know your front four can generate pressure, there are so many things that you can do on the back end of a defense. Mm-hmm. There are so many combinations that you can shut down people's passing ability. You could take away those holes that you were just talking about, those intermediate holes that a lot of teams have exploited against Raiders. There are so many things, but you've got to be able to generate that pass rush with your front four. Chandler Jones is a guy who's competent and capable of doing that, taking over games and becoming a changer, just like Max Crosby. Can you imagine the thought where you have 5 offensive linemen, then you have to keep in a back,
yeah,
and a tight end,
yep,
full max protection, seven-man protection to block four. Can you imagine what the secondary can do on the back end of just covering three eligible receivers?
Good point.
Yeah, that's how you create a bunch of turnovers.
Why you got to have everybody being able to get to the quarterback. You got to have those weapons. If Chandler Jones, and I'm saying his name now, you know how I felt before last game. Yeah, if Chandler Jones becomes like a Max Crosby, that type of energy, that type of passion, that type of ability, you are going to put the fear in opposing offenses. You are going to give the better ability to your defense, especially your secondary, creating turnovers, creating miscues, taking receivers out of the football game if you can keep that competent pass rush up.
And to JT's point, I mean, I thought he had a better game, the best game he had in the silver and black, and actually forced a couple holding penalties, which I thought was a big deal because it obviously backed up the Broncos. They got out of first and 30, which they shouldn't have done, but it really helped them back him up with those holding penalties.
Yeah, and you know what? That whole situation, I remember talking with Jason on the air. He was like, what would you do? I said, I would have declined the penalty. I would have taken it down. I wouldn't give you more opportunities to move the ball, but that's just me. Right. I'm not coaching. I'm not sitting there down in the coaching ability, but I'm just saying there are things that I think you have to think through that we haven't necessarily seen so far this season. And again, I think everybody needs preseason, from coaching staffs to players. Everyone else needs it, because there are times where you've got to get in the right frame of mind to understand not only the situation, the pace and everything else, but also the feeling of a game situation.
All right, Lincoln, here we go. Since I interviewed you as a player and all the years you've been on radio with us and TV, the word misdirection comes to mind with Kansas City. I've been saying it for 20 years. They start a play one way, the play comes back the other way, and no one's there. And we've had good players, and Andy Reid's able to run those misdirection plays. Now, the good news is there's no more Tyreek Hill. And now there's Kelce, who I can't imagine can have a big game because he's killed the Raiders over the years. You got to take him out of the game, the Belichick model. Take him out of the game, and they got good players. But they're going to run misdirection. And I love what you said early about how Mahomes can go deep. He can trick you in to the line of scrimmage, get a guy like Jonathan Abram or Merrick to come in, and then go over the top. But tackling principles, tackling and bringing these guys to the ground, and knowing these gimmick misdirection plays that they've been running against this organization for well over 20 years.
You know, it's something. I can't stand the Chiefs. This is probably the biggest nemesis. This is the one that I've gone to every general manager that we've had since I've retired and say, just let me suit up against these guys. Please just let me hit somebody.
Not Denver with the snowball.
When I went up in the stands with snowball, I took care of the Denver Bronco fans and the organization that one slug. But it's the Chiefs, the Chiefs, the Chiefs, the Chiefs. Look. You know, when it comes to playing an Andy Reid deep offense and playing against him, you know, there's been several theories, whether you want to keep them off the field, you want to time possess and stuff like that. Andy Reid is probably one of the most creative offensive minds I've ever witnessed, I've ever watched. He has ways of getting guys the football. And I certainly respect that as a former offensive player. When you have a capable quarterback of Patrick Mahomes, there's no throw he can't make. There's no play that he can't improvise on, and I think they've worked off of that. So when you're playing against a Kansas City Chiefs offense, you've got to be sound and competent in your responsibilities, whatever they are. If you've got Travis Kelce man-on-man, you can't let him go. You've got to follow him. You've got to mirror him. You've got to be ready to read his eyes to try to make a play. Not always saying that you're going to be successful that way, because many teams have tried. The thing is that you have to score touchdowns against the Chiefs. That's what it comes down to. You're not going to beat Kansas City by scoring field goals.
Yeah. Right.
And so that's one of the things that have hurt my feelings as a commentator and a broadcaster covering the Raiders, is that their red zone inefficiency. They can move the ball between the 20s. Mm-hmm. But when they get in a red zone, they struggle. And to me, that's where the creativity of the Kansas City Chiefs and Andy Reid come out, because they've been creative of getting into the football into the end zone. I mean, look how many teams have copycat that little underneath draw where they run one way and they throw it back underneath to a receiver or a running back or a tight end and the offensive line is run blocking ahead to get a touchdown. How many teams have copied that?
Right.
There are things like that that have helped the Chiefs propel to where they are. For the Raiders, in order to beat the Chiefs, the big thing is not only that you have to score touchdowns, but on defense, you have to find a way to harass Patrick Mahomes. And the Chiefs have paid attention to their offensive line and their receiving core. Even without Tyreek Hill, they're still competent because they still run those combination routes, guys.
No, they really do. And Lincoln, to your credit, man, the Kansas City Chiefs have scored 15 touchdowns through four games. 15 touchdowns through four games. Yeah. You're not going to beat them by kicking a bunch of field goals. So how creative can head coach Josh McDaniels get in the red zone this upcoming Monday?
Well, it's hard. It's hard because, again, the thing is, to me, without a preseason, when you can try these certain plays out, it's hard to instill them. It's hard to get them going in practice because, of course, you're going to win in practice. You draw them up, you put them against a defense that you know is going to happen. You're going to win those in practice. But I'm taking back to the Bronco game. There was that one instance where the Raiders are down on the goal line. Now, before in the season, you know, earlier this season, they ran the little pick screen to Devontae Adams, got him in the end zone. Yeah. Okay. They tried to run the same formation and same play. The only twist this time was they were going to run a fade route to Hollins instead of throw it to Devontae Adams. But Hollins got held up on the line by the press. So he wasn't there. So you can see the creativity come into play, but it's a rather implementing it and trying it during a game where you have your, you know, you have your little difficulties, whether it works or not. And you can't blow the whistle and say, okay, let's do it over again. Now let's do this, make these plays, because you have it during the game. So I've seen a spot of creativity. I've seen them try different things, you know, both Lombardi and Josh McDaniels. And I appreciate that. It's just hard to get that work in when it's actual game time and you don't have do-overs after that.
Well, Lincoln, last one, we'll let you out here on this. These are two of the greatest play callers in NFL history. Josh McDaniels with 6 Super Bowl rings. No one's ever done that as an assistant or a coordinator. And Andy Reid's going to the Hall of Fame. His success has been unbelievable. Do you expect a shootout? Because I think the Raiders coming off this Denver game want to take the clock out. They want to run the ball with Josh, pound him, and have a great back-to-back game. But as you said, if they're down by 2 scores or down by 7 or 8, they got to embrace the shootout. And I wonder, last question to you, do you come in attacking or do you try to take the air out of the ball and keep feeding Josh?
Always attack. Attack. Yeah. Whether you're doing it with Josh or however, you always attack. The fact is, guys, we need the touchdowns.
Right.
You know what I mean? You got to get touchdowns. So you got to be attacking. You got to attack. And the thing is, I'll use this little bit of analogy before I go. When you watch the Golden State Warriors in their heyday, you weren't going to beat them if you got an inside presence and you were dunking the ball or you were running layups all the time. Because why? They were shooting threes. They were shooting lights out. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the Kansas City Chiefs. You don't score touchdowns. You can get into a shootout, but you got to score touchdowns with the shootout. You know what I mean? I didn't mind the possible onside kick against the Broncos. I thought it was being aggressive. I didn't mind it.
Right.
And plus, the Broncos' offense, was unpredictable, inconsistent. So I didn't mind you trying the onside kick. I wouldn't try it against the Kansas City Chiefs. I wouldn't give them a short field. I would challenge them to go to long distance of the field. But at the same point, it's different strokes for different folks. So when you're talking about playing the Chiefs, I say you got to stay aggressive. You got to go with that killer attitude. And if you get a substantial lead, no lead is safe with number 15 on the other side of the ball.
Facts.
Thank you, Lincoln.
I mean, it may really blow it up if you can.
Yeah. have a great trip to Kansas City. We'll do it again on the roundtable next week, Lincoln. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, guys.
There's the great Lincoln Kennedy. When we come back, we'll take a look at the AFC West standings and what lies ahead Monday Night Football in this rivalry as we head on out to Kansas City on the Raiders Roundtable.
When you're a part of a team, there are expectations. And one of the things I expect from my team is trust. I work hard to win, and I trust my team to work hard too. That's why I feel good about America First Credit Union. They're my financial team, and I trust that they'll always be there for me and my community. I'm Hunter Renfro. Join me and the America First team today.
60 years in the making. The Raiders now have a permanent place to call home, and the doors are open to get a world-class behind-the-scenes tour of their new home. An attraction unlike any other in Las Vegas, Allegiant Stadium. The Las Vegas Raiders invite you to experience the expertly guided tour that includes exclusive access to areas restricted to only football players, coaches, and staff. For more information, visit AllegiantStadium.com/tours.
Welcome back to Raiders Roundtable. Thanks again to Lincoln Kennedy. Q, let's jump ahead to Kansas City as we touched on with Lincoln. This is a big moment. When fans start circling wins and losses and adding them up, I believe this is the toughest game of the year, period. other than, and I'll say, the Rams on Thursday Night Football because they're the reigning world champs
right.
on a short week. So this is a game that the Raiders now want to win. I don't say they have to win it like it was against Denver, but you want to go into this bye week with some momentum. It'd be tremendous momentum if they could go back-to-back.
Right, especially if you're going on the road. You're going to Arrowhead on a Monday night, so it's primetime action. You know, you'd love to go out there and say, hey, you know what, this Raiders team is full of talent, and yeah, we got off to a slow start, but this is going to be a really good team, and it's going to be a tough out each and every time we take the field. So it could be a big statement that they make on Monday night if they go to Arrowhead and find a way to get it done.
Yeah, and it's too early. I said on the radio, on Raider Nation Radio, we're not talking playoffs.
Right, no.
Until you get to 500, right. You're in that position. But the Raiders won there a couple of years ago, and Carr was amazing in that game.
Yeah.
And I thought the key was he had time, but he went through his progressions, and he made great short throws, and then he attacked downfield.
Right.
This is not an elite Kansas City defense. This is not the Kansas City team that looks like a Super Bowl team that we saw 3-4 years ago going to two of them and winning one. I think they got to attack, as Lincoln said, and we got to get Waller going.
Yes.
You know, Darren Waller is a hell of a player. He just got money. He just got paid. And they're trying to find ways to get him going. I think he's critical to match Kelsey and have that. And he should want to match Kelsey.
Right.
He should want to go up against a Hall of Famer like a Gronkowski or a Kelsey and said, I was able to go toe-to-toe with that
guy. He should want to be the best, right?
Yes,
I mean, that's exactly what it is. He's always talked about in the top three. Well, you know, the top three, put him in any order. Well, how about be the top one? Right, go with that mindset that, no, I'm not top three, I'm top one. And I think, to Lincoln's credit, you know, guys have to play in the preseason. You know, Darren Waller didn't get the opportunity to even play in training camp because, you know, whatever the reason why he was not out there, he, you know, didn't get that chemistry. And I think that he's still kind of getting his sea legs underneath him.
Yeah, and Kansas City was impressive against the Buccaneers. They lose to Indianapolis and get dominated in that game in all three phases, and then it just shows their preparation. Now, I think a lot went into that game. Tampa Bay moved from Tampa to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
They had a hurricane in the state. Kansas City didn't have to deal with that. They came in and they were fresh. They pounced on the Bucs. That's the first time I saw a team put the Buccaneers away in the first quarter with Tom Brady. So I think the Raiders got to be concerned about starting fast, because if they can start fast in this game, it takes the crowd out of the game a little bit, and it changes it. I've always said this against Kansas City, just get to halftime.
Right.
Get to halftime, down three be even, because we've seen Josh McDaniels make really good adjustments.
Absolutely, and Patrick Graham for that as well, you know, defensively. So I think that you're right. If they can get to halftime, be really close, if not leading, then they have a great opportunity. But they've just got to go out there, like you said, and they've got to attack. They've got to attack early. They can't just kind of slow play it into the game, feel their way out, because Kansas City's not going to feel anything. Kansas City's going to go full throttle.
Well, look at the teams that won in the AFC West. That's why I was so important for the Raiders to beat the Broncos, because we saw the Chargers beat the Texans, and that was interesting to me because Justin Herbert isn't
right.
And I had an insider on my show that said he's not going to be right the whole year.
Right.
And I hope he is. I want to see guys get healthy in this league. But, you know, the Chargers are decimated. Been waiting for Mr. Interception, J.C. Jackson, Bosa's out.
Right.
We know the quarterback's hurt a bit, but they had a gutty, gritty win that puts them right back into the playoff race again.
No, they are definitely in there. But, you know, the funny thing is, I look at the AFC West, and we talked about it all offseason and training camp, preseason, how it's going to be such a gauntlet, and it hasn't really shook out to be that just yet, right? And so no matter what the Raiders got off to their start, they're still in the thick of things, but they just have to start stacking wins, right? Like you said, and let's not talk about playoffs. They just got to start stacking wins and start getting that confidence, building it up, and understanding what they're doing, and they could be right in the mix.
Tell everybody on Raiders Roundtable how they can find us on the radio. Really important as we go from Raiders Roundtable right here to host our radio shows.
Raider Nation Radio 920. Of course, you can always hear us on the Raiders app if you're out of town and you're streaming us. It's very critical. It's just a little radio symbol right there on it. You can't miss it. Definitely something that you know, you need to check out. And of course, 9:20 a.m. right here in Las Vegas. And just love to be able to talk with Raider Nation on the daily.
Thanks to America First Credit Union. Thanks to everybody viewing us. And keep coming back here. It's the newest podcast on the Raiders Podcasting Network. It's Raiders Roundtable. For Q Myers, Lincoln Kennedy, I'm JT. And go Raiders on the road Monday night in Kansas City.